Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The press is aghast that Donald Trump continues to claim that it's fake news what his own son has admitted to, namely that he was colluding with the Russians to try to find dirt on Hillary Clinton. They're still calling it fake news. At the same time, Donald Trump says, and this is the exact quote, most people would have taken that meeting. Really, Donald? Most people would have taken that meeting? I guess that's my question for the heart of today's show. Donald Trump seems to believe that Republicans, and after all, that's who he hangs out with, that's whose morality he knows best, that Republicans hate America so much, are so unpatriotic, in fact, that they would be willing to help our greatest enemy commit espionage against the United States if it would help them win an election. They'd be willing to collude with, conspire with Russians to do basically what Benedict Arnold did with the British back during the Revolution, to work with our enemy in order to work together, Trump and Russia, against his real foe, Hillary Clinton. Are all Republicans really that unpatriotic? Is Donald Trump right? They all would have taken that meeting. None of them really care about their country. They care much more about power and winning election. To try to answer that, I'd like to talk a little bit more about, truth. Which, if you're keeping notes, is the opposite of fake news. Let's not forget, by the way, where the whole term fake news came from. It came from Russia, who was putting forth fake news on behalf of Donald Trump, all kinds of vicious lies in order to get him elected. That's undisputed. It's actually undisputable. It was very clever of them to do a little jujitsu move and try to claim the purveyors of fake news now claim that truth is fake news. But actually, it's a common fascist technique. And no, I'm not using fascism to be hyperbolic or to try to be sensational. I'm telling you the truth. The whole scope of fake news is a common fascist technique, a dictatorial technique. And one commonly used by even as much as, and I'm going to break Godwin's law here, Adolf Hitler. Though he wasn't unique to it. It's true of Stalin. It's true of most dictators. It's even true of American would-be dictators. Yale history professor Timothy Snyder says that post-truth is pre-fascism. To abandon facts is to abandon freedom. I couldn't agree with him more. And the press has an especially difficult problem in dealing with this. In fact, in the McCarthy era, newspapers had a particular problem. They tried really hard, as we might say in modern parlance, to be fair and balanced. But in trying to do so, they actually made things worse. Senator Joseph McCarthy in the 1950s would accuse various Americans of being communists or Soviet spies, and newspapers would print the story. It was a big story when a sitting United States senator would make such accusations, and they'd have one column that says, McCarthy says Owen Lattimore is a spy. And then, to be fair and balanced, they'd have another column right alongside saying, Lattimore denies he's a spy. But the newspapers didn't have any evidence that Lattimore was a spy, and neither did Joe McCarthy. They would just have Joe McCarthy's false accusation put up alongside the truth. But you see, it's not fair and balanced to put the truth beside a lie. It actually elevates the lie and does real disservice to the truth. The public in those days thought there was a legitimate debate as to whether, based on hard evidence, Owen Lattimore was a spy. But he was never a spy. That's what the hard evidence wasn't even contradicted. And the newspapers shouldn't have printed those libelous accusations without any evidence to back them up. We see these same faux debates today between, say, the 97% of climatologists who think climate change is real and have scientific evidence behind it, who think global warming is real and it's man-made. And there's fewer than 3%, frankly, almost all of those financed by carbon-polluting industries, who deny this basic scientific fact. 97% say it's real, 3%, mostly biased, say it's not. Now that's a 32-to-1, if my math is right, discrepancy. But you can imagine an article in today's media exploring the controversy might say, well, you know, here's a scientist who believes in scientific climate change, and he debates someone who does not. But that's not a fair debate, any more than it's fair to say Owen Lattimore is a communist, Owen Lattimore is not a Russian spy or communist. The only fair way to express actual scientific authority in 2017 on climate change, this would be fair, is to have 32 scientists all say why they think climate change is real, and then one who disagrees, who says it's not real or not man-made. And then 32-to-1 would reflect actual scientific belief on the question. But you know what? If you're going to have a debate on climate change, hey, you know, let's debate round Earth versus flat Earth, right? I'm sure we can find 3% of people who believe the Earth is flat, maybe only 2%, but let's have the debate. We could also debate evolutionism versus creationism. Now, to be fair, creationism, this is the belief that the Bible is right in all its aspects, that it actually is describing science rather than religion, that the Earth was created in 7 24-hour periods. Creationism, like flat earthism, like climate change denial, have about the same degree of scientific consensus. Basically, no scientific support. And don't get me wrong, you know, I would get an intellectual kick out of arguing for a flat earth. I mean, that would be fun. And you know what? In full disclosure, and as a sixth grader, I remember playing William Jennings Bryan. You know who he is? He ran for president 3 times in the late 19th century. He was a preacher, and he firmly believed in creationism. And he was actually brought on the stand during the Scopes Monkey trial in the 1920s. That was the trial when Mr. Scopes was a teacher in Dayton, Tennessee, small town in Tennessee, and he broke the law because he taught evolution in schools. And he was brought up on charges and was defended by the great Clarence Darrow, one of the greatest attorneys in American history. Anyway, I remember I played this preacher character. I didn't play Clarence Darrow. That's too much equivalent to my own skepticism and belief in logic and truth and science. So I decided to play the preacher in the play Inherit the Wind about the Scopes Monkey Trial. And I still remember when they asked me, you know, what time the Earth began, and my friend was playing Clarence Darrow, was cross-examining me, and the frustrated preacher shouts out, 9 a.m., because obviously we don't know the answer. It's not in the Bible. But as fun as that is for me and for others, and I get it, a good reporter's role is not to play devil's advocate. Actually, kind of an ironic turn of phrase, given that William Jennings Bryan would be rolling around his grave if we called him the devil. But that is not the goal of a journalist, to take something like flat earth or creationism or denial of climate change and pretend it has a scientific reality. It's interesting as an intellectual argument. It's interesting to try to defend the indefensible. That's not the goal of a journalist, and it shouldn't be. The goal of a journalist has to always be to find and print the truth. with no favor to anyone that they're friends with or anyone paying their bills, right? That's why the climate scientists paid by Exxon really have no real authority whatsoever. And also no fear of power, right? The journalists in North Korea may want to tell the truth about their dictator. The same is true about the journalists in Russia. But if you're jailed and or killed for telling the truth, you know what? You might decide that you're not going to tell the truth so much. So there can't be any favors to friends. There can't be any fear of power. And the New York Times, for more than a century, has proclaimed it provides all the news that's fit to print. That's at the top of every one of their newspapers. The Washington Post has a new masthead. Democracy dies in darkness. Very good. And in fact, I would argue the New York Times and the Washington Post have done really well in exposing the current president and his collusion with our enemy to do treasonous acts. But when the New York Times has said for over 100 years that they're going to print all the news that's fit to print, the trouble is not all things are fit to print. And category one for unprintable is what we might call, for lack of a better term, fake news. False accusations, bad science, really any assertions without evidence. I mean, that's fake news. And it's better not to even dignify fake news in print. Because if you print false or unfounded information, it gives it this dignity it does not deserve. You can't devote the same column inches to the round earth and the flat earth theory, because that would confuse those who don't know the truth or who might have difficulty weighing scientific evidence, particularly if they aren't experts in the field. You can't have a debate about creationism and evolutionism. It's not a scientific debate. You could have a religious discussion. You can't have a debate over whether someone is a spy or not. There's either evidence or there isn't evidence. And false accusations made about people, well, that's what McCarthyism is, isn't it? I miss Walter Cronkite. Remember Walter? Those of you who are older than a certain age. In the 1970s, Walter Cronkite said, "That's the way it is." And you knew that's the way it was. Oh, you might have an opinion about the Vietnam War or such and such fact, but you never deny the fact existed. If Cronkite said it, it was so. You could take it to the bank. And everyone, as Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan liked to say, everyone is entitled to his own opinion, but not to his own facts. Today we have a bewildering assortment of news sources. It's not like Walter Cronkite anymore. And when we come back, I want to talk about how this bewildering assortment of news sources leads us to not know which way is up, which way is truth, and allows those who want to manipulate the public mind to do so quite well. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking in defense of truth today. We have a president who talks about fake news and really seems to be trying to confuse everyone. And what I'm trying to show is that this is not anything new or unique to Donald Trump. In fact, it has a long, scary history. And it's difficult for the media to contradict it. We talked before the break about how difficult it is when the media, wanting to be fair, wanting to show the controversy, might accidentally elevate a fake position, a false position, an untrue position, with a true one. and how that didn't happen under Walter Cronkite. How when Walter Cronkite spoke, the entire nation believed he had it right. He had the facts right. You could have your opinion. You couldn't have your own facts. And today we don't live that anymore. And generally that's a good thing. We have a wide variety of sources of news. It's not CBS, ABC, NBC, PBS. It's hundreds of cable channels. It's tens of millions, dare I say hundreds of millions, billions of people on Facebook, all giving their own news, and it's all mixed up. The legitimate, the illegitimate, it's all right there on the internet for us. Our internet browsers can give us the Washington Post and the New York Times on an equal playing field with Russian propaganda, or Breitbart, or Alex Jones, all kinds of fake news. And now, Cronkite isn't there anymore. Rest in peace, Walter. It is up to us. We are the filters. We have to determine the way it is. And sometimes we're not that good at it. We're not professional journalists. When the president tweets things he knows to be untrue, it gets even more difficult to tell fact from fiction. And we're part of the problem, right? We listen only to those who agree with us. I always hope on my show, and I do get some conservative listeners, I particularly welcome them. I think you're brave and wonderful, and I encourage liberals to watch on Fox. I'll be on Fox this Saturday. I believe in talking to people with whom I disagree. But most of us, we listen only to those who agree with us and watch only the television channels that already comport with our views. Heck, even Google is now confirming our prejudices. Our search engine is giving us only the news that we want to hear, and sometimes only the news we can emotionally accept. We live in our silos, accepting only what we believe to be true and what we want to be true. And our rational, logical brain capitulates to our amygdala. You know what the amygdala is? It's that part in the brain that controls our emotions. We are surrendering our logical thought. And note I'm saying we here, because even though as a liberal I do think that this is an affliction that affects conservatives more, although, heck, you know, you should ask me, Mark, where's your evidence? And I should provide you with evidence, because otherwise it's just my belief. Maybe it's just my emotion talking to me. Maybe I'm talking to you now out of my amygdala. I do believe it to be true, but, you know, you have a right to ask me for scientific evidence. I think there has been some that I've read, but that's not good enough. I'll see if I can find it later on the broadcast. Maybe you can Google it yourself. But my point is this. Even if I believe it happens more among conservatives, I know it happens to all of us. I know it happens to liberals too. And it's a real danger. And it's a real danger that great evil has used to manipulate people's minds. We're going to get to that after the break. Call in if you like. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. We're talking about truth, fake news. How do you know which way is up? How do you know what's right? How do evil people manipulate lies into getting people to do what they want? And how much trouble this gives to the national media. Our surrender of logical thought is the single most powerful mechanism by which great evil can transform ordinary human beings from men into monsters. I want to read to you a detailed quote. I want you to think about this quote and whether you believe it's true or not, then I'll tell you who wrote it. You may recognize it, but let me read it to you. This is a direct quote. In the big lie, there is always a certain force of credibility, because the broad masses of a nation are always more easily corrupted in the deeper strata of their emotional nature than consciously or voluntarily. And thus, in the primitive simplicity of their minds, they more readily fall victims to the big lie than the small lie, since they themselves often tell small lies in little matters, but would be ashamed to resort to large-scale falsehoods. It would never come into their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would not believe that others could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. Even though the facts which prove this to be so may be brought clearly to their minds, they will still doubt and waver and will continue to think that there may be some other explanation. For the grossly impudent lie always leaves traces behind it, even after it has been nailed down, a fact which is known to all expert liars in this world and to all who conspire together in the art of lying. Do you know who wrote that quote? You might have figured it out by now. The person who wrote that, his name is Adolf Hitler, and he wrote it in Mein Kampf in 1925, about 8 years before coming to power. He thought this manipulation was so easy to do that he bragged about how to do it. He actually gave us instructions. He told people how it was done. And then later on in the same page, he blames it all on the Jews. But the point is, he put some thought into it. He put some thought in how to go around logic and hit emotion. Understanding that emotion was more powerful than logic for many of us, most of us, and understanding that the big lie was more effective than the small lie. Now that's counterintuitive. It doesn't really make sense. A big lie? Climate change isn't real? The earth isn't round? The liberal media is all about fake news? A big lie, why would that be easier than a small lie? Like Donald Trump Jr. wasn't at a meeting at a certain time or place. Well, the answer is, as Adolf Hitler told us, people don't believe people do big lies because it would be shameful. We wouldn't do big lies, normal people, rational people. We don't do big lies. We might do small lies, little lies. We didn't take the cookie from the cookie jar. But big lies? We wouldn't do it ourselves, and so we hesitate to believe that others would do such a thing. Who would believe the President of the United States would take a known fact and lie about it? President Obama was born in Hawaii. Pretty obvious. 2 + 2 = 4. Donald Trump Jr. did collude.
That the intelligence agencies allowed any information that turned out to be so false and fake out. I think it's a disgrace. And I say that. And that's something that Nazi Germany would have done and did do. I think it's a disgrace. That information that was false and fake and never happened got released to the public. As far BuzzFeed, which is a failing pile of garbage, writing it, I think they're going to suffer the consequences.
I'm still on Facebook,
they already are. And as far as CNN going out of their way,
all right, let's take
to
a
build
break.
It up. And by the way, we just found
all right.
out
that
was
oh my God.
Michael Cohen. I was being Michael Cohen.
I actually heard that noise and I went, all right, tell you what.
We just reported that it wasn't this Michael Cohen they were talking about. So all night long, it's Michael Cohen. I said, I want to see your passport. He brings his passport to my office. I say, hey, wait a minute. He didn't leave the country. He wasn't out of the country. They had Michael Cohen of the Trump Organization was in Prague. It turned out to be a different Michael Cohen.
Sure.
It's a disgrace what took place. It's a disgrace. And I think they ought to apologize
Sir.
To start with Michael Cohen.
Sir, since you're attacking us, can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect. Since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking our news organization. Can you give us a chance to ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can you state, Mr. President-elect, can you state categorically, Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question? You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give us a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
So you can hear Donald Trump sparring with the media. Welcome back, folks. We had a technical problem, which is why my fantastic producer, Mark Grimaldi, was playing for you that clip. But that clip illustrates exactly the problem. And, well, as I was saying, dictators have used this problem. Hannah Arendt taught us that fascists don't lie to obscure the truth. They lie to signal what they want to become the truth. You repeat a lie often enough and it becomes true to you. And that's why the Big Brother in George Orwell's 1984 made his subjects say, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. I mean, that was the mantra. And if he could get Winston, the hero of that story, to say 2 + 2 = 5, to say something he knew to be untrue, well, that was all he needed. That's when he knew that he was in control. Post-truth is pre-fascism. To abandon facts is to abandon freedom. And I realize it's all pretty bleak. This is a very bleak thing to share. And to see it going on before our own eyes with our president is really scary. And many Americans are tempted to hide under the covers, to wish it away, to say, you know, I can't control what goes on in my country. I got a family, and I got to take care of them, and I got to go to work every day, and I've got to take care of someone who's sick. And that's all true. But the worst choice in a democracy is to run and hide. Martin Luther King told us that the moment we know, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the quote in front of me, but that men are tried not by when times are good, but when times are bad, that's when we find the true measure of a human being. So don't hide. And take comfort in the fact that, yes, we've had McCarthyism. Yes, we've had horrible things go on throughout American history. But we have managed to retain freedom of thought here in the United States for more than 240 years. And no doubt that's because of a free, unfettered, aggressive media. The Fourth Estate. There are three branches of government. This is the fourth branch. But it only works because enough of us remain vigilant. We citizens have a role as well, a very important role. It is our role to police the press, just as it's the role of the press to police our government. And when the government forces them to turn the cameras off, it's up to us to insist that our government turn the cameras on. We must protect the press just as we police the press. We, the people, are in charge. It's our government. And we have roles within social media. I talked about how social media is often the source of the lies, right? That's how the Russians were able to hack into our minds and help change the election. That's how Putin got Donald Trump elected. So we have a role to play. If you're on social media, you have a role to play. If lies are printed, it's our role to call them out. If innuendo is spread, it's our job to catch it and to turn it on its head. We must even be willing, for the sake of truth, to ostracize friends and family who repeat clear untruths and refuse to retract them. Sorry, Uncle Joe, I love you. But that's not true. Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. Here's the birth certificate. And if you're not going to believe that, then why do you believe Mitt Romney's birth certificate? Or for that matter, John McCain's, who was born in Panama? Could it be you have another agenda going on? No, Uncle Joe, that's not true. Read Snopes.com. Don't just trust Snopes, although I do. Look at their sources. That is false. No, Breitbart, Donald Trump Jr. did collude with the Russians, and of course he knew what he was doing. Here are the emails. The emails that he provided when the New York Times threatened to publish them. This isn't fake news. It's fact. It's undeniable fact. And it's hard sometimes to tell someone we love that they're spreading false news and that they're damaging democracy. But we must unapologetically expose any attempts to propagate the big lie as rank evil, because that's what it is. And yet, and this is hard for everybody, liberals, conservatives, everyone, we must at the same time remain open to the possibility that we ourselves may be wrong. Now, that's hard to do. Right? You got to call out the liars, but what if you're wrong? What if the people you think are lying are telling the truth? How do you know which way is up? I give the example of a scuba diver. I've gone scuba diving. It's been a few years, but and I'm no professional. But if you get deep down in the ocean, in a very deep area of the ocean, where you can't see the sunlight anymore, and you can't see the floor of the ocean anymore, and you might even suffer from a little bit of narcosis. That's a lack of oxygen, and you get turned around and flipped around, and it can get to the point in the cold ocean where you don't know which way is up. For all you know, you could be facing up instead of down, but you don't see the sun because it's way up above you. And above your head, way down deep below, is the bottom of the ocean. And when you get nervous and you try to rise, you actually are going deeper into the ocean. Pretty scary, right? Particularly in a very deep ocean. So how does the smart scuba diver know which way is up? Well, if she keeps her wits about her and she doesn't panic and she doesn't immediately try to go up as far as she can when she may be going down even farther, all she does is blow some air bubbles out. And the air bubbles always float to the surface. If she's upside down, the bubbles will float down and then down is up. She needs to switch directions. Logic must trump emotion. Pardon the pun, but logic must prevail. And we have to see which way is up. And sometimes that requires a dramatic force of will and self-discipline. But at the end of the day, the defense of truth is up to us. It's our job. It's not the press. It's not the president. It's up to us. It's our job. We, the people. Or as Benjamin Franklin told us, you have a republic if we can keep it. I think these principles, frankly, are general principles that apply anywhere. But in the time of Trump, at a time when we don't even know, for example, because it got very little press, that there was another person in the room with Jared Kushner and with Donald Trump Jr. and with campaign manager Paul Manafort and with the Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya. Rinat Akhmetshin told the Associated Press on Friday that he was at the meeting too. And Trump's attorney confirmed that Akhmetshin was there. So it ain't fake news when both sides admit the truth. Who's Akhmetshin? Akhmetshin is a Russian spy. He is someone who has a history of hacking material. According to Akhmetshin, he left material with Donald Trump Jr., a folder of documents left at the Trump Tower. The high-level and sensitive information they promised on Hillary Clinton is apparently in that folder. My source, by the way, is the Daily Beast. You should look at it. You should see whether others confirm this source, although the Associated Press confirms that he's there. Again, you should check to see which way is up. But the Daily Beast checked with court papers filed with the New York Supreme Court, which is actually the lowest court of New York, in November 2015. Ahmed Shein is described in court papers as, quote, a former Soviet military counterintelligence officer, unquote. Who accused him of that? A Russian company, a Russian mining company called International Mineral Resources, IMR. IMR says Ahmed Shein hacked into two of its computer systems, stole sensitive and confidential information, and used it in a black ops smear campaign against IMR. Is this all a coincidence? The U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., a different court, was told in July 2015 that Ahmed Shein had arranged the hacking of the mining company's private records, stole internal documents, and then disseminated them. And a New York law firm paid Ahmed Shein $140,000, including expenses, to organize a public relations campaign targeting IMR. Right after he was hired, IMR suffered, quote, a sophisticated and systematic breach of its computers, and gigabytes of data allegedly stolen in the breach wound up in the hands of journalists and human rights groups critical of the mining company. IMR accused Ahmed Shein of paying Russian hackers to carry out the attack, unquote. Now, I don't know whether IMR is right or wrong in the dispute, but there seems little doubt Ahmed Shein is a paid hacker who has a pattern of stealing information for money and then exposing it to the press. There's even a private eye that wrote in a sworn declaration that he heard Ahmed Shein in a London coffee shop brag that he could be hired because he could do certain things a law firm couldn't do. Ahmed Shein denied the accusation but admitted that he passed around a hard drive filled with data on IMR's owners. Is this all a coincidence? That this guy was in the room with Donald Trump Jr.? We have a right to know the truth. And don't let them call this one fake news. This is Mark Levine. I hope you enjoyed the show today in Defense of Truth. If you have any questions or comments, leave them on Facebook or on my website at marklevinetalk.com. And I'll be back on Wednesday. This is Mark Levine signing off.